So as we have seen, the law of love is so intertwined with the law of sacrifice that we find in the Gita, where in the beginning we want the higher to sacrifice for the lower. So there are people who want God to do this, that, everything only for them, and if he doesn't do, apparently, whatever this, he is cruel, he is this, he is that. And it develops like that, people. Then there is a give and take, even with God. I have given this, I want this. And then there is the highest play where, which Mother and Sri Aurobindo speak about, is to just to give oneself, the joy of losing oneself in the divine. And while there have been some examples, beautiful examples in Indian thought, which are very difficult, it's important to bring that into the forefront because they are not understood by someone who is out of sympathy with Indian culture and especially the high Aryan type of culture which was developed. That why should Rani Padmini, with so many of them, throw herself into the fire? Someone would call it madness. Pragmatic wisdom was, it's okay, now your husband is defeated. Khilji is the new man. You be with him or run away somewhere. But she chooses to immolate. There's something very amazing. It's an act, conscious act. So she doesn't want her love to be defiled at any point. And that's a great event which, you know, that place still has that spirit of sacrifice. I have been there, though it's in ruins, but, you know, still can feel that intensity of what intensity must have built up during that moment. So we have these stories of Meera merging completely into the at Nathadwara in that image of Sri Krishna. Meera ho gayi magan, aisi lagi lagan, to gali gali hari gun gaane lagi. These are Chaitanya Mahaprabhu literally seeing the sea and the reflection of the sky, and oh, Shyam Varn, this is my Krishna, and he plunges into it. These are not, these are ultimate acme, ecstasy, the fourth status of love, of life. We have not yet developed, and, but I would just say there is a fifth status of life. Sri Aurobindo is a gentleman, he doesn't mention, but that is the sacrifice of Sri Aurobindo. Whenever I see that picture of Sri Aurobindo lying on the bed, I only feel that this, only the supreme love can do it. Renouncing, first he made the renunciation of realization in his own body to hasten the collectives. First he does that because he was going ahead at jet speed towards supramental realization, but he sacrifices it. He says, no, I'll take everybody together. Just unimaginable. Your own realization is the ultimate. But he says, no, I'll take everybody together. And he and the mother both. And then, ultimately, he plunges into the inconscient so that he can annihilate the difficulty. See, we hear about Shiva doing the Vishpan. This is something much more. These are the expressions of the highest states of love where, for the sake of all, one completely gives oneself. And in that highest of the highest, I just see Sri Aurobindo giving himself completely, or so that earth may progress. And he knew what humanity is. He knew we are not ready. He knew that there is a possibility that this sacrifice may go a waste. Supermind had not yet manifested. He knew all this. And yet he takes the plunge, which is something unimaginable. So the least we can do is to be grateful. That's all I feel. That benchmark he has set is beyond human comprehension. But to at least to be grateful. Okay, so we come back to this, come to this new chapter 22, the problem of life. Everybody has problems. Life is a problem. This is a common refrain, and it's true. When people come and say, I have a problem in life, in my life. So sometimes we can, in a semi-humorous way, say, oh, you're the only one who has problem in it's very corrective. It can be very curative, huh? But if it rubs the wrong way, then you had it. You make fun of my problem. No, but it is true. You see, Nishikanto having all kinds of diseases in the body, and if somebody went and said, my knees are aching, he would laugh and say, look at this fellow. I am a walking laboratory of diseases. I am laughing. This fellow is crying about some pain in the knee. life, there is a problem. Of course, life is a problem. But it's an evolutionary problem and an evolutionary necessity. If everything was fine, if we all had comfortable lives, 110% we would have remained where we are, encrusted. And all life that does not progress is bound to degenerate. China, America, wherever, if you don't progress inwardly, you will degenerate. This is the law. It may take place over, because life of nations is over decades and centuries. It may not happen immediately. If you don't progress, and the road of progress, Aurobindo has said that, towards unity, towards mutually nourishing each other, helping each other. So that's why when people say, oh, what will happen to these people? I say, they have written their destiny, don't worry. By its very nature, it will collapse. Now, of course, I am talking of the fundamentalist, or not fundamentalist is the wrong word, fanatic jihadist. So 20 years back also, I said, they are writing their own death on the wall. How now? See how it has happened. They initially thought, played a tool with India, then they tried experiment here and there. Now, what has happened? The world is isolating you. Are you going to fight with all life which is around you? Cannot. There will come a point. Already it has started. In 25 years this has taken, what a change it has taken place. Because it's an ideology which driven where you want to annihilate everybody and survive. You will get hit very badly. Of course, there are people who still keep crying, you know, Palestine, Bichara. It's a law of life. The moment you keep hitting, you will get a rebound and a recoil. And that recoil can be devastating. So it's a question of time. So this is how, and we see that uprising. We don't have to worry about that. We have to grow in our consciousness, because that's the ultimate solution. And we should know what is what with open eyes. So what really is the problem? So Dr. Sri Aurobindo is telling us, the divine doctor. So he is going to tell us what is the problem, because up till now we think problem is with my neighbor. Or if we say, no, problem is in my house, then we think wife is the problem, wife thinks husband is the problem. Or the child is the problem, or parents are the problem. Problem is not in us, huh? Problem is always somebody else. So, Aurobindo is telling us, after reminding us of the three status of life, again, this is the most important, the evolutionary statuses of life which we read. So, first problem, page 221. Man is this mental being. The whole crux and difficulty of human life lies here. The passage starts. Man is this mental being, this mental consciousness working as a mental force, aware in a way of the universal force and life of which he is part. But because he has not knowledge of its universality or even of the totality of his own being, unable to deal either with life in general or with his own life in a really effective and victorious movement of mastery. So we don't know who we are, what we are. Any of us 30 years back, 40 years back, we would have never imagined that this kind of transition will take place. And yet it was all the time inside. The psychic flame was there, we didn't know it. and how at what point of time it is touched by the descending fire from above and something awakens and all grows beautiful because of the divine beloved. Now no one would have known, at least, I mean, I was an agnostic to start with. So I could never imagine what bhakti could be. And always it is God is all about at most meditation, personal salvation. That doesn't interest me. It's too selfish. And how the change takes place with everything, it changes. So she and everybody's life, the change takes place. So, but mind doesn't know. So why? Because mind is, page 222, more and more a flame of growing knowledge. And after 5-10 lines below, either man must fulfill himself by satisfying the divine within him, or he must produce out of himself a new and greater being who will be more capable of satisfying it. What is this satisfaction he's saying about? The flame of growing knowledge. You want to grow into knowledge, page 222. That's what mind wants, but it is unable to. By its nature, it cannot. So, one way is to grow one with the divine, or else something else will come and replace us. He must either himself become a divine humanity or give place to Superman. Again, prophecy. No options are left here. He says very categorically, either we must evolve into the divine humanity of the future. Now, why is using the word Superman? It's something very interesting. As if they're not synonymous. Here he's not using them as synonymous. Or else, now Superman is a greater consciousness which will come and take hold of man and change him completely. But the problem is that what about the evolving humanity? It's like suddenly apes getting transmuted into humans. The link is lost. So he would prefer that we evolve into the divine humanity rather than, and all that we know how mother spoke about it subsequently in the Superman consciousness. Page 223. So this is also an answer. Someone asked, when we look at people around and, you know, humanity around, you know, again, hope and what's going to happen. So one short answer is, yes, humanity is around and is what it is. But Superman is already there amongst us. There is a beautiful writing of Nalnida, and Mother also said, Superman is already there. He's evolving, he's growing. And you can't stifle it, like baby Krishna. That's the answer somebody would have given. If someone would have asked that, you know, Kansa is there, this is there, that is there. That's how Durvasa Rishi, no? That famous story. He is giving a lecture and people are not interested in his lecture. They are worried about Kansa's reign, when it is going to end. And he looks into Krishna's eyes, shall I tell? And Krishna quietly says, say whatever you may, their buddhi is in my hands. They will understand what I want them to understand. So he simply says that, you know, when a child will lift up the mountain, know that your Kansa's reign has ended. So everybody interpreted in their own way. That it means it'll never end. It's an impossibility, no? Or in heaven it is possible. So it means on earth it won't end. And of course the third set, Sri Aurobindo's disciples say, let us do exercise. I won't go to school. I'll go to gym and I'll drink milk. Why? Because that child, no, maybe I am that child. And Krishna is smiling. So Krishna is there. That is the hope. If you looked at humanity that time, and that's why he prepared humanity in his own way before overthrowing Kansa. So the Superman is here. The supramental manifestation has started. Superman is here. Look that side. Don't look at much of humanity may well go away. The divine has his own ways, and Mother has spoken of that. All life depends on page 223, new para. All life depends for its nature on the fundamental poise of its own constituting consciousness. For as the consciousness is, so will the force be. This is again another axiomatic truth. Where the consciousness is infinite, one, transcendent of its acts and forms, even while embracing and informing, organizing and executing them, as is the consciousness of Satchidananda, so will be the force, infinite in its scope, one in its works, transcendent in its power and self-knowledge. That means change of consciousness is the solution. We want more power, but we don't want to change the consciousness. It's a disaster. It won't be given beyond a point. Change the consciousness, force will automatically come. When the consciousness is like that of material nature, Sandhi describes what would happen, and a few lines below, where the consciousness is divided in itself as in mind, limiting itself in various centers, setting each to fulfill itself without knowledge of what is in other centers and of its relation to others, aware of things and forces in their apparent division and opposition to each other, but not in their real unity, such will be the force. It will be a life like that we are and see around us. It will be a clash and intertwining of individual lives, seeking each its own fulfillment without knowing its relation to others. There will be conflict, difficulty. You may have lectures on conflict resolution. You may visit the best psychiatrist in the world, that we quarrel with each other. It won't work out. Unless you are ready to change yourself at some level, some point. Otherwise it will work out. Sometime when child is there, you may decide, but it'll find all kinds of channels and all kinds of things. But the problem is not there. Problem is change your consciousness. And if that changes, everything else changes. Mother described it so beautifully. When she was asked, what do you mean that, you know, about different types of love? She said, it's very simple. If you have the consciousness of an animal, your love will be like an animal. If you have the consciousness of a human being, your love will be like a human being. And if you have the consciousness of a god, your love will be like a god's. Say simple. So as is the consciousness, so is the force that expresses itself. So the only solution is change the consciousness. There is an event which has happened. You have found that there is quarrel, conflict. And you are busy blaming the other person, and the other person is blaming you. So nowadays they say, so we must discover what is in me that I need to change. So here he is describing, the fact is you don't know what is going on in another person's mind. That is an ignorance of the mind, doesn't know what is going on in the environment. So many times this happens. You don't know what's happening inside somebody else. And yet you want to, I mean, this is so many funny things happen like that. And often when a lady expects a man or vice versa, you don't know me? How would one know? One is an ignorant human being. One has to grow to know. Otherwise one wouldn't know what is going on in another person's mind. And yet we draw conclusions, we have conflict. Oh, he said this. And often to that, what is added is from the thought, he meant this. How do you know what he or she meant? You don't know what he or she meant. Simply because he said this. Sometimes not even word. Oh, he did this gesture. So, you know, like those who don't know, sometimes in Tamil Nadu, one would do like this, asking what or why, I don't know the exact word. But if you show this gesture to somebody from the north, one may feel you are threatening. It's like, who are you? But it's a very sweet gesture. They're asking, what is it? So it's just that the, you know, the mutti is clasped. How do you know by the gesture? You'll end up with that story of Kalidas. She shows one finger, and he shows two fingers. She shows five hands, and he shows the mutti. And he declared that he knows, Mauni Baba knows everything. And both interpretations are different. She showed that one, there is one reality. And he showed two. So people tell, actually he is saying it's one reality, but it's divided into two, Purusha and Prakriti. Then she shows five, Panch Mahabhut. He says, no, Panch Mahabhut have to come together. But this man is thinking something else. When she showed one finger, he thought, oh, she wants to take away one eye. I will take two of yours. And when she showed this, he thought, oh, you're going to slap me? You think you're smart? I'm going to punch you. See, this is what happens. What a misunderstanding of words. Words create confusion. Not speaking creates confusion. Because our mind is a fundamental limitation. So it's our problem that we don't understand others. Others also don't understand us. So we should not expect that somebody would understand us. How can somebody? Expecting the person to be God. So it's just not possible. Yes, we can grow together. That's possible. So he says, therefore, it will be a clash and intertwining of individual lives, seeking each its own fulfillment without knowing its relation to others, a conflict and difficult accommodation of divided and opposing or differing forces, and in the mentality, a mixing, a shock and wrestle, an insecure combination of divided and opposing or divergent ideas which cannot arrive at the knowledge of their necessity to each other or grasp their place as elements of that unity. This is what is required. Each of us is needed for each other. Each of us has a place. But Mr. Ego comes and says, my place, not only here, even that place I want where you are sitting. And then it makes it worse and worse. Not only that place where you are sitting, I must be on top. You have to be subservient. Divine has given to each one their place. And if we keep understand that, life would be so much beautiful. And we need each other. That's also true. This is the law of love which automatically reveals. But where the consciousness is in full possession of both the diversity and the unity. So he's not talking of Satchidananda alone. But again and again, the supermind. That's the solution. Not Satchidananda, not spiritual life. That is not the solution for life here. That may be a solution for an individual, if at all one wants to call it a solution. But for life here upon earth, collective life, the only solution is supermind. Because there the secret of diversity and unity is there. Where it is aware at once of the law, truth and right of the all, and the law, truth and right of the individual, and the two become consciously harmonized in a mutual unity, where the whole nature of the consciousness is the one, knowing itself as the many, and the many knowing themselves as the one. So one then respects each other's line of development. Doesn't try to change another. The one of the biggest delusions that human beings carry and discover very painfully. He doesn't change. Do you change? And he, even if he changes, people change, of course, over a period. Why should he change according to your idea of what the change should be? He has to evolve along his or her own lines. You can't impose that change. Because each one, that's why diversity is there. Otherwise, uniformity. Everybody should be like me. It doesn't work out like that. Each one will evolve along their own lines through their own experiences. Yes, yet we can help each other grow, evolve. Maybe, a suggestion here and there. But this wish to change somebody according to my idea of what the change should be is a very dangerous thing. It doesn't work. That's why Shobindo has given so much freedom. And he says Superman can only be created that way. You can't do it arbitrarily by an external law. There is the law with a capital L. The law of evolution. That's why he would say different things to different people. If you see there is somebody to whom he said you should not go out, you should be here and To somebody else he would permit all kinds of things. A tea party at home, a rasgulla, treat. See, Dilip Kumar Roy, he is so happy that if I can have rasgullas here, if permitted, then this is the ashram for me. He also asked for tea party and Sri Aurobindo says he had an idea, mother has refused it. He says, where has mother refused you having tea party? But to Sahanadi, when she asks that, Guru, I am having desire to have crabs and lobsters and fishes. Sri Aurobindo says, eat your desire. So, because each one's law of development is different, he has an expansive vital. He needs that kind of largeness. even to make errors. It's because that's how he is developing. But somebody has a simpler path carved out, straight like that, each through his own way or different stage of evolution. So that's the law. So then the third problem we see on page 225. So in supermind, it is the fulfilled existence where we discover that is the real life of the real man towards which this partial life and partial unfulfilled manhood is striving forward. So basically we need to understand that until we have the transformation, all solutions will be provisional solutions. They will break down today or tomorrow. So we should help each other evolve towards that life. That should be our focus. Because then we don't even know who we are, real man. And what is the life we are meant to lead? We don't know the law of our being. So we have to go through all kinds of situation. That is the poise of being in Superman, the supermind. When perfect knowledge comes. From the data we have now before us, we can see that the difficulties which arise from the imperfect poise of consciousness and force in man in his present status of mind and life are principally three. So he's summarizing for us. First, he's aware only of a small part of his own being, his surface mentality. So we don't even know ourselves. Forget about knowing somebody else. Then, large part of us is submerged. We can only have some real power over so much of our existence as we are identified with by self-awareness. And then he says there is a subliminal being in us, a subconscious being, and all that we have to discover. So that goes on for a page and a half. Then the second difficulty, page 226, the passage from top, the last four lines of the passage. The partial and apparent man here will find there the perfect and real man. There means the supramental transformation, truth power, truth consciousness. Capable of an entirely self-aware being by his full unity with that self-existent, who is the omniscient lord of his own cosmic evolution and procession. So I fancy this in a little fanciful way that two people are fighting and growing and fighting and growing. And eventually they get transformed. And then suddenly in their transformed state, they wake up one morning and see each other. And say, oh, you are a goddess? And say, oh, you are a god? I didn't know this. Now imagine, they could have gone happily toward that state. Singing songs. Why they were quarreling? Because there you discover that we are not enemies. We are friends. Best of friends. So this is what is the status is the real man discovers the real life within. The second difficulty is that man is separated in his mind, his life, his body from the universal, and therefore, even as he does not know himself, is equally and even more incapable of knowing his fellow creature. This should be like written in the board. So beautiful to admit that I don't know you. Not that way, you know, somebody will get angry. You don't know me. That should not happen, no, no. Like once when I can share this. Kavita had worn glasses first time. And it was in my sister's house. So she had, I think first day or second day wearing the glasses. Suddenly I saw her. There were quite a few people. And I'm looking at her. I think I know you. And he said, what? After so many years of marriage, I think I know you. I meant it because I couldn't recognize that instant, you know, with few people moving around with the glasses. So don't say that I don't know you that way. But know in the heart that I really don't know who is behind. And the simpler way, we don't know who is the real person. At least this month we should know that in everybody there is a divine element. That is something we can take as faith. So whatever be the surface appearances, this much we can have faith. that there is the divine within. Maybe I should interact only with that part and not interact with that part which is, Pashu and the evil. Very often in certain interactions, we will see the worst comes out. And in certain interactions, the same person brings out the best. So maybe I need to just ensure that instead of bringing out the worst, I bring out the best, because there is a best in everybody. That's the ancient spiritual wisdom. But minimum is that we don't know what's going on in another person. He forms by inferences, theories, observations, and a certain imperfect capacity of sympathy, a rough mental construction about them. But this is not knowledge. Knowledge can only come by conscious identity. That's how we know ourselves. So unless we are able to identify, we will not know. So till we don't know, best is to assume, take it. Not, it's not an assumption, it's a practice of yoga that the divine is in everyone. Of course, we are dealing with the frontal personality and we have to deal according to the needs of that moment and the inspiration that comes. But we should always know, never condemn, not be full of hatred, anger, because there is the divine element. So that's what we should remember. And if we see impersonally, we will always see some quality or the other of the divine expressing itself in each one. It may be a quality like drawing the line straight. It's a kind of beginning of perfect. Always, this is an invariable fact. In every one, sometimes we say, oh, you are very stubborn. Now see divine how stubborn he is. He gives us all the freedom, but does he? He's stubborn. His will is so stubborn that ultimately no human will can prevail against the divine will. So stubbornness is not always, it depends on the context. So everybody has something good in that person. And we should very consciously try to see. And if possible, communicate, because it helps to know that yes, there is something beautiful about me. So this is the second difficulty. Page 227, somewhere in the middle. Therefore, we must arrive at a conscious unity with the fellow beings and not merely at the sympathy created by love or the understanding created by mental knowledge. But he's not discarding. Sympathy and understanding is a step. It won't lead to the perfect unity. Next step is conscious unity, which only through yoga it can come. But this conscious oneness can only be established by entering into that in which we are one with them. The universal and the fullness of the universal exists consciently only in that which is superconscient to us in the supermind. So again we go to that. The supermind alone commands unity in diversity. So problems of life are many. Solution is only one. We can put it on the table, supramental transformation. Anybody comes and says, I have this problem, that problem, we can become Mauni Baba and say, solution is, but I can't do it, then problem will remain. Sorry. No second solution. How beautifully he is leading us logically. We can't know. And if we don't know, there will be clash and strife. The third difficulty is the division between force and consciousness in the evolutionary existence. That's what is, the spirit willeth, but the flesh is weak. So many times people say, I want to do this, but I am not able to do it. Of course, very often it can just be a way of, because it's also true that where there is a will, there is a way. But if will is not there, weak, but the knowledge is there, I would want to do it, but the will. So there is a disparity between consciousness, what one knows, and the force with which one has to effectuate. So this is also universal. See, so nice that Sri Aurobindo knows all our problems. One thing that we learn from this is that he knows where the will is weak, where what is what. He knows what is hidden inside us. He knows that we don't know ourselves. He knows why we quarrel. So he has the perfect answer. So if you don't want to give a technical answer, supramental transformation, give a very simple answer. Problems are so many, but the answer is the mother. Solution is mother. That's a beautiful way of saying the same thing. So it's not just a sentiment that, call mother, market dako. It's true. Because who else can know? Who else can solve? So, the third difficulty is this disparity. The life is at war with the body. It attempts to force it to satisfy life's desires, impulses, satisfactions, and demands from its limited capacity. What could only be possible of an immortal and divine body? So people fall sick. Chalo, let's go. Now, at one age, you are able to do it. That's why one should not, one should know the friendship with the same age, because you may just get carried away. Unless there is a complete mastery. Otherwise, say no, because you have to respect, you know, as you grow the body's capacities, they change. The mind is at war with both. So, you have gone because life has driven you. Let's say when you are 60 and you know, you have a friend who is 30 and both go together because you have moved, suddenly let's go. Now the mind is another at war. Why did the body listen to the life, my body cannot, and why I hurt? So you are, you know, actually going, all this is going through in your mind. So mind is at war with both. It does not know what to say. So it is kabhi haan, kabhi na. And at the end, it just follows the impulse of the moment. So that's not a good way to live. The mind is at war. Sometimes restrains the vital urge and seeks to protect the corporeal frame from life's desires, passions, and overdriving energies. So this is how sometimes it wise enough says, "Bhai, you can do all this, but it's not for me. You can keep awake till 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, partying. I can't. Not only I am not supposed to, but I have to respect my own limits, and my friendship doesn't mean that I have to do this." So this is how sometimes it succeeds, but at other times it doesn't. This is the war of our members, which the mind cannot satisfactorily resolve, because it has to deal with a problem insoluble to it. The aspiration of an immortal being in a mortal life and body. This is the inner war without escape. That's what Shubhendu says in Savitri. And he goes on to say, man must find or miss his higher fate. This is the inner war without escape. Because if one is like a cork upon the sea, whatever suggestion comes, one just goes with it. You can't. So that's why later on in Supramental Manifestation, his writing says, first thing is to bring your life under the control of the mind. Shobindo's beautiful. He says, go step by step. Let the discerning mind dominate. The Gita also says the same thing, Buddhi Yoga. First you bring it under the control of the discerning intellect. Now it may not be possible to bring everything under the control, but start with whatever one can. Moderation, sanyam, slowly the lower reaches lesser and keep turning it upward and inward. Then a time comes when something greater takes over and life becomes smoother. But this is the process. This is a workable solution. This is the war of our members which the mind cannot satisfactorily resolve, because always it's thinking, I wish I did, I wish I did not. So it is always swinging between the two. Okay, so we can go toward the end. Man in proportion, page 229, man in proportion as he develops into a self-conscious and truly thinking being becomes acutely aware of all this discord and disparateness in his parts. This is the sign of first step of evolution. That we read in the previous chapter also. That what is the sign? He says that if you have entered into the mental evolution and evolved to a point where you begin to feel the need of association and love, then it's a good sign. So man, as he evolves, what he becomes aware, bhaiya, problem is not outside me. I have problems inside me. And what is the problem? That there is so much tussle inside me. I always thought that the other fellow, see how uncomfortable this can make life. That's why yoga is not for all. Because before yoga, problem is always outside you. It's the neighbors, it's the wife, husband. So easy life is. You don't have to work upon yourself. Others have to change. If they don't change, you can just sing a sad song and say, "Dekho, that's how my life is. Nobody listens to me, nobody." But when you take up yoga, what do you discover? Shobindo says, the first discovery you make, synthesis of yoga, he says, the first discovery that you make is a disconcerting discovery that within us there is a disorderly order. Outside it all looks nice because we are expert at deceiving, sadhu vachya. So that's why people, when they say saintly, see, it's one thing to be a saint, but if you live with a saint, you will fight with the saint. Because see, there are parts which are untransformed. So you become aware that there are many things in nature which are not transformed. This is the first step. Without this, actually spiritual life has not begun. That's all Mother says. So long as we are blaming others, complaining about others, we have not started on the path. So he becomes acutely aware. And he seeks to arrive at a harmony of his mind, life and body. A harmony of his knowledge and will and emotion. A harmony of all his members. Sometimes this desire stops short at the attainment of a workable compromise which will bring with it a relative peace. But compromise can only be a halt on the way. Sometimes you say, okay, let the devil have his way and let the divine also. So morning I have done my meditation, I have done my prayer at the samadhi. Now I can have a party. I have already gone for darshan. So happy I am feeling. Now I will go for the jalebi treat. So because now you are releasing another. So mind is sort of, you know, mind is like quota system it follows. You are also satisfied. You are also satisfied. Does it solve the problem? Both are unsatisfied. Because both want completely. This is the problem. So the only way is to get rid of it. Do dharma. That's the solution. Because you are trying to satisfy. That's the problem of democracy. You want to satisfy this group. So you give some pound. You give 20%. To another group, you have given 20%. General quota, 60%. Then this 20%, after some time, I want that other also. You have still 60%. So it keeps on increasing. Then these people who are in that 20% say, I also want now. So they will fight. You will lead to a civil war. Actually, people are not realizing this quota system is opening doors to a civil war. But they are not bold enough to understand and take a decision. People will cry for some time after that. You can handle it now, but if you don't do it, it will create problems. Because it is not going to solve, because it's a compromise. People can't remain compromised forever. Already we see this is happening. So you have to act by dharma. Well, people, I mean, nowhere in the world we have quota system. It's the only place where we have quotas. Go to any place. It comes by merit. Okay, whatever had happened, put a date. From this day, we will stop it. Put a date. Because if you leave it hanging, you are opening doors to growing dissatisfaction. So that is the logic. You can apply this anywhere. So he says that it is only a, since the deity within will not be satisfied eventually with less than a perfect harmony, combining in itself the integral development of a many-sided potentialities. Also because life demands all by its nature. Most people are living at the level of the desire. They want all. They cannot be satisfied. It starts like that. That's why the famous story, when you have nothing, you want only little. When you have little, you want little more. When you have little more, God, can I have a little more? With the emphasis on, okay, when you have little more, then you want more. And then you have much more. This is the logic, because life is like that. But others also want much more. So there is a clash. So this perfect harmony, which cannot be done, less than this would be an evasion of the problem, not its solution. Or else only a temporary solution provided as a resting place for the soul in its continual self-enlargement and ascension. That's why democracy is destined to fail. That's why constitution cannot be the last word. Because it's all mental activity. Mind cannot solve the problem it creates. It can only be a temporary stopgap. What is going to come? Mother hinted it. It's only in India that the psychic law can and must rule. What is psychic law? Dharma. To understand dharma, which is not about religion and outer ritual. Dharma applies to all. And its seat is in the heart. Such a perfect harmony would demand, as essential terms, a perfect mentality, a perfect play of vital force, a perfect physical existence. Few lines below. The principle and power of perfection are there in the superconscious, but wrapped up in the tegument or veil of the lower maya. So that has to be discovered. This is how one should become the leader of a country. See, it's so beautiful that we have these books like Vikram Betal and we have Singhasan Batisi. It's a very interesting, fascinating story, the story of 32 dolls. So Vikramaditya is given a throne, and when he's about to sit on the throne, suddenly a doll comes out and says, "Wait, hold on, you can't sit on the throne, you have to answer my question." So it tells a story and he has to give an answer. Then the other doll comes. At the end, he says, when he has answered, he says, "Though you have not answered to the best of our satisfaction," showing the relativity of mental, "but yet you are better than the others, so you can occupy the throne." So earlier, how it used to be there, it was done by the wise people who would coronate and select. But democracy has leveled out all greatness. It has flattened because it's numbers. So imagine a country where there is animals did the voting. I'm not talking of the book Animal Farm. This is a beautiful book though. Animals did a voting where majority were sheep. And there were few lions. Whom will they vote? They would say our survival. But who can better govern their existence? It's the lion. Because he can safeguard them against invasions from other beings all around. So that's how one has to look at the way things should be. And that's why the parliamentary form of democracy will fail. Shobindu's prediction. What will come is little better is presidential form and with quite a bit of autonomy to all the things around. Why presidential? Because then you are not, it's not about party and people individually. Something like part of it is practiced in America, where you have two candidates or three candidates depending on the party, each declaring that I want to be the ruler, and he talks to the people, explains to the people, and then people understand, and that's how the vote it should be brought. This is at least one step better. The real thing cannot come so long as we live in the mind. It always be subject. But something better and better till finally only with supramental transformation can we find the perfect harmony. So let's hasten towards that so that world can become a better place and a beautiful place it is meant to be. Okay, we meet tomorrow. It's the last day. We have it here only. Thank you.